This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. If you're a fan of MPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
David R.K. Harding,
Iola Hegarty,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Dave, you came to a job at Massey in
April 1973, and I retired fully at the end of 2021, December 23.
Wow, and what age were you when you retired?
I am 78, so facing 79.
Yeah. So, and was there any issue of you staying on to that? They just said keep working.
No. They asked me to retire. I formally retired in 2019, and then I was rehired at 50% for a year, and then I was hired for 18 months at 20%.
Oh, yeah, okay. But that was still way into your 70s.
Into my 70s.
Were there many people that sort of age working at Massey?
Not too many, no. A lot of my colleagues had retired, and so several of them unfortunately had passed on.
Yeah, I suppose health would be an issue, wouldn't it?
Yes, it was for two of them. Right. Two of them at
Yeah. So clearly, you had a very long time at Massey. And you were working in chemistry.
Yes,
then,
48 years at Massey.
Yeah. So, when working in chemistry, what would an academic chemist be doing in those?
In my case, I was involved more or less from shortly after I arrived. I got involved with peptide and small protein synthetic chemistry, and then later on in the 1990s I moved into carbohydrate chemistry, building synthetic methods for isolating peptides and proteins and other biologically active materials from, in many cases, from natural sources.
And also for
a short while, purification of wastewaters, dirty water and stuff like that.
Okay, so a lot of it had fairly direct application.
Yes, I've always been interested in using chemistry for practical purposes.
Yeah,
I have no problem with people doing what used to be called pure chemistry, just for mind-boggling pure applications, but I myself always wanted to apply my chemistry.
Yeah, and it was all closely linked to agriculture, presumably.
And to some extent, yes. Although I'm retired, I'm still involved with my last PhD student, whose oral examination is the 30th of March this year, and so my last connection with Massey will be his oral examination on that date, the completion of his PhD, which I am absolutely certain he will pass without any problem whatsoever. And his application is involvement in this, in the item you just suggested, in involving isolation of gastrointestinal nematodes, in other words, stomach worms from cows and sheep, animals with four stomachs.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is a major challenge, because a lot of the bioactive materials used to try and control these gastrointestinal nematodes are becoming less and less effective these days, and there does not appear to be any new materials coming along. So we're looking at trying to use carbohydrate matrices to work on this problem.
Okay. So what, in your research time at Mercy, do any particular projects stand out?
Oh, yes. I've had students from Egypt and other parts of the world involved with me. My first Egyptian student is now quite famous. He's heavily publishing, and he's working in the university, Zawael University, out of Cairo, and he's very effective. This university was set up for the Nobel Prize winning chemist, who they set up a university under his Nobel Prize winning award, and he's working there. His work is very, very well taken. There's a lot of good things. There's a New Zealand girl who's in Queensland. Her work is well taken as well. Mm-hmm. I've been very lucky. In my experience at Massey, I've been very lucky. A lot of my graduate students, I don't regard myself as being their supervisor. I've been very lucky to have been able to collaborate with these graduate students, and this has been one of the most satisfying part of my career at Massey.
Yeah.
Not to say that there's anything wrong with being involved with undergraduate students. There's a lot of undergraduate students I've been very happy to work with as well, but the part of the graduate program has been that be able to collaborate with these students. I've not had to stand over them and tell them put this in this test tube in the sense of supervising. So it's the collaborative part of the graduate program. Also with most of my masterate students, I've not had to stand there and tell them what to do in the supervising way.
So your focus really, it's more the research side rather than, say, teaching?
I don't mind the teaching as well. I was late coming to teaching. Of the 48 years at Massey, I didn't come to full on. I did do some teaching throughout, on and off, when it was needed, but I was able to stay with research right through and from the 70s through to the middle of 1990s before I was asked to become fully involved with teaching. I was late, in my career to come to teaching. Therefore, that's why... I was lucky in that sense.
But also on the research side, though, would it be? I know in a lot of the social science in my own area, economics, the chances are a research student would have their topic that they're doing. And for chemistry, is it more a collaborative? Like they're involved in a broader project with several people.
Yes, I don't. I'm not sure that I would understand how somebody would come to economics as such, but when in chemistry the students come around to various supervisors to ask you what area you have topics available for research in, and so you say, well, I've got this and this. So in my case, I would say, well, I've got some interest in wastewater purification. I've got some interest in the synthesis of peptides for looking at neutralizing gastrointestinal nematodes. Mm-hmm. I have got an interest in this carbohydrate structures for trapping gastrointestinal nematodes, and so I've got interest in this peptides for this disease and that disease and so on. And they might say, well, I'm really interested in that.
Okay.
Or, no way am I interested in anything you've got. I'll go and see Dr. So-and-so.
So it's not so much like you've got four or five researchers with some research funding for a topic and you're looking for PhD students to work as part of that team in company.
Well, it could be that. It could be like that.
Okay.
It could be like that as well. You might have applied to the Medical Research Council or the Heart Foundation or something and got this money in.
Yeah, yeah.
But in some cases, you might have sat down with the student and put their name in the application as well.
Yeah, yeah,
there's different ways of going about this approach. Yeah.
But for chemistry type research, there'd be a lot of funding and specialist equipment needed.
In some cases, there would be, yes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
in some cases, you would already have the equipment, depending on the status of your particular program.
Hmm.
It might be a program that was going for 10 years. It might be some new program that you've just dreamt up.
Okay, yeah. But it's essentially lab-based research?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Not in my case, but in some colleagues' cases, it could be all theoretical. The laboratory could be your computer.
Hmm.
It could all be done on your computer. There's a range of applications, so it can all be theoretical.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
how have you seen things change over, I don't know, has the discipline of chemistry changed in your time in the area?
The focus of chemistry has changed a lot in my lifetime from just doing chemistry for the sake of chemistry to... I think it's basically application. It's become more application focused over the years.
Mm.
Chemistry has just become a part of the overall approach of science, and it's become more biological.
Yeah.
In the case as far as applications go,
is that with the because of Massey in New Zealand and agriculture or globally the same?
Globally, I would say.
Okay.
Globally, Massey, because it's agricultural and so on, but it's just globally. Hmm. Purification for because of the world's need for purer water, for example. Once again, I keep coming back to this, but it's basic. There's all the everywhere we look, we're looking for purer water wherever we are.
Yeah,
that's one of the big ones. Okay.
Yeah.
Because the metal contamination of drinking water and stuff like this is just one big example.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So does that mean that things are more cross-disciplinary now?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. So that's why I'm emphasizing on bio.
Yeah. Okay.
Purification, safety issues, health safety issues. Yeah.
So what other disciplines would you tend to be working with? If you've got a team on something, there'd be the chemists.
Medical.
Yeah.
Food safety, again, which is, of course, involved with medical or bio, basically.
Hmm. Yeah, and the technology would have changed a lot as well, wouldn't it?
Of course, The analytical technology has got more refined, as it were. You can get down to the milligram, nanogram detection levels.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So you're getting the detection levels have got a lot better.
Yeah. So that's meters and then microscopes and things.
All sorts of stuff like that. Yeah, detection levels. The biological testing is more accurate now, much better than it was 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So you think that would you say there's been major advances in what would stand out as the would you say there's been breakthroughs in the past?
Oh, it's just got better.
Yeah,
the detection levels are just much better. I think the other side of it would be that the equipment has got cheap. The detection equipment has probably got cheaper too.
Yeah, yeah.
And also probably the equipment is smaller, smaller, lighter, and easier to move around. All this sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
you look at some of the things on the older programs now, the equipment's bigger and heavier and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. And have computers had a big effect on
I would say so, exactly.
Yeah, in what way? The databases you could use, or
I would say so, and the information's easier to get at, the more information easier to get at.
Yeah. So that's more sort of accessing published things rather.
Yeah,
But for analysis, like in economics, we'd have the large databases which we could play around with. But you'd be doing more experimentation, would it, in data from experiments?
I would think so.
Yeah. So is that highly statistical?
You probably need to talk to somebody else about that than myself, because I'm not into statistics as such. I would just hopefully be able to find the analytical data when I was looking for it.
Well, you'd find the analytical data, but in terms of processing the data, what?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So internationally, then, is there much linkage overseas in the work that's being done?
Oh yes, one thing I have noticed is that there's an awful lot more journals available. The quality of them as such is variable. The other thing that is interesting is we have a rating system of them. You know, they've got
So ranking of the journals.
But the interesting thing the kind of thing that worries me, of course, is if it's a subject that's not well known, or there are not many people in the area, of course it's not going to be used very much, so it's not going to get a very high ranking.
Does that
particularly mean that the journal's not very good? If it's not used very much or not accessed very much, it's not going to get a high usage or high number of people publishing in it. So I'm a little bit concerned sometimes that the journal doesn't have a high ranking, so people won't think highly of it, you know.
Yeah, it depends on when you've got, as we've moved to assessment methods across all disciplines, it does cause a problem. But there was a method as well, where if you're probably in the right university and you want to make a name for yourself, you and a group of people set up your own sub-discipline with your own journal, and then you're controlling the editing and publication.
Yes, it's a little bit of concern to me, but
we've moved away from the idea of universities being funded for the staff to be doing teaching and research, and they separate out the research funding, which is caused a problem, because by making it competitive, then that has a big effect. But which comes back to the issue as well, though, how much of the chemistry research is the large funding and needing labs and staff so on, and how much can be just more generally available or low cost research.
There's an interesting issue came up a while ago from one of the vice chancellors at Massey University. And he said that he didn't really think that undergraduates' teaching needed to involve what were called wet chemistry, in other words, laboratory chemistry, until third year, which I thought was a little bit scary.
Yes.
Because you need to be able to use your hands and fingers on glassware that could be wet and slippery, and you've got to get used to be able to handling this. And if you don't do that until third year, and then you're going to go out and get a job in a lab, that's a bit scary to me. I don't know what you think, but
I'd actually, interesting that you say that, because I'd heard, polytechs, as they became more like universities, it meant that a lot of the hands-on thing disappeared. So they weren't getting the training that was actually giving them the skills that their graduates would expect to have.
It's a bit scary.
Yeah.
See, in my case, I as we said in the other session that we've had on had today, is that I got married after doing a BSc honours and went to England, worked for a drug company called Eli Lilly's. Their main base is in Indianapolis, Indiana, United States. Worked for them for 2.5 years and then went to Canada to do my PhD. So when I got off the plane in Canada and went into the lab, I was producing chemicals in my chemistry lab in Canada at the end of my first month. You don't get that happening very often. I'm not saying I'm a fantastic chemist or anything else like that, but I was spent 2.5 years in England making chemicals send to Indianapolis as test drug candidates. So when I got off the plane in Canada, I was already ready to do. Once I got my glassware together in Canada, I was able to start making chemicals. And so, much to my supervisor's surprise in Canada, I was producing stuff inside a month after starting a PhD program. You don't often get that if you've got a chemist coming along at Massey University. And so if you've got somebody who hasn't handled any glassware until the third year of their BSc, or even their BSc honours program is only a few months, you know, it's not doesn't sound very promising to me.
There's a similar issue in a way in economics. If you haven't actually gone out and worked in applied areas and seen that the problems where you're actually dealing in a cross-disciplinary environment with politicians and decision makers, you don't really have much idea of what's actually going on. You can present a theoretical structure, but otherwise not. And I actually found that was one of the advantages with Massey teaching distance students, is that you had mature mid-career people who were actually had an awareness of real-world circumstances,
seen a bit of life.
Yes, and so to teach them, there's a two-way flow, but you have to show that you have a certain understanding with that. But was there much distance teaching at all in chemistry?
Oh yes, yes. They used to come at the May in the not the May holidays now. In between
in the term breaks when term it was breaks, a full year course.
Term breaks and that. They used to come. I wasn't involved with that very much at all, but I used to see them coming, and that, and my colleagues would be involved with that when it was operating.
We had a lot of that where there were school teachers, because they were funded to go and had leave, and it counted towards their salaries. But that changed a lot, and now I think on campus courses for distance students, that you just don't get the attendance anymore.
The other interesting thing I involved at Massey that I enjoyed for, I think it was three years and one term it was in those days, was I ran a hostel, looked after a hostel.
Yeah.
And enjoyed that. The one part term with the third term was because I took over at the end of the year, and of course the students had total control of the hostel, and it was a real struggle because unfortunately the person I took over from was the chaplain on the campus, and he had no idea how to control them. But
so they got up to pranks and misbehaved.
And of course this end of the late spring and the early and the summer, then the autumn terms were water fights type.
We had those as well. We got great skill at throwing a
but the set up a Sunday afternoon bar in the common room, and we did quite well with that, because we ran it properly. We made sure everybody paid properly and looked after the money. One year we hired a band called My Sex.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
We this the June holiday, the Monday holiday, we hired them for one evening, and we made a big profit and bought a brand new pool table and everything for the hostel.
All right,
which we were able to do quite well. That was an interesting time. I'll tell you about that sometime, but I'll bore you with it now.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.